threshold, and it's a bit more open and shut. What's interesting here is that, you know, I'm not sure what they'll be investigating, because we've all seen the emails. The question is just whether or not this meets this threshold. I suppose they'll be discussing with Andrew whether or not he knew that what he did was a breach of his responsibility in that role.
You know, what's astounding, Michael, is you have Andrew being arrested. And in, here in the United States, we have not seen as much fallout. In fact, I think President Trump just said that the millions of pages of documents have exonerated him, though he was named over 1,000 times. Next up could be, is that right, the former British ambassador to the U.S., Mandelson, who also, interestingly, was a trade envoy, and there are questions about revealing information that was given over to Jeffrey Epstein.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's interesting here, and what's disappointing to some people actually, is obviously this is a story about sex trafficking, about the abuse of numerous women, and it seems like where justice might be brought, it's on a different charge, which is sharing confidential information with a powerful person. In both cases, Mandelson and Prince Andrew, there are suggestions that maybe they were quid pro quos here. So when it came to Mandelson, he was sharing this information, which was market sensitive and which would have been useful to Epstein. And it seems that in return, what he was getting was Epstein's help in helping his lobbying firm after he left government, or getting a job with JP Morgan. These seemed to be what he was considering. He didn't end up getting a job with JP Morgan, but he was clearly, from the emails, angling for one. With Andrew, we know that
we're going to have to leave it there. But we thank you so much for being with us with Novara Media in London. And today marks Democracy Now!'s 30th anniversary. On the air, our first show, February 19th, 1996. We've got a show, Nermeen, as well here in this image. On Monday, we'll be celebrating Riverside Church in New York. Guests will include Angela Davis, Naomi Klein, Maria Ressa, Michael Stipe, Wynton Marsalis, Mazhab Abu-Toha, V, Hooray for the Riff Raff, and more. We'll be streaming the event live at democracynow.org. Happy anniversary, everyone.
Happy
anniversary, Nermeen.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. KBOO's Board of Directors meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Good morning. This is Jacqueline Keeler, and you are listening to the KBOO Radio and actually weekly show, 8th Urbanium. It's a call-in show, so please do call in. The number here is 503-231-8187. So we are basically looking at, what is the impact going to be I think we're facing some two different outcomes. I'm sure you're all reading about AI and what it means and what's going to happen. And the other day I had a thought. You know, it was like, how in the movie The Matrix, you know, humans are we're still valuable to the system as I guess batteries, right? It's not really the case in the emerging AI world that we're seeing happening. What would be our role, right? And that's the question for today. Would we even have a role, right? And of course, it's obvious that the billionaire owner's role would be to own it all, right? But what about the rest of us? And so that's what we're going to talk about today, the rest of us. The question is, what happens? Where does this all go to? And actually, let's start with an audio clip, actually, from Anthropic CEO Dari Omode. He has been writing a lot about the issue, And here he is talking to Anderson Cooper.
Dario Amodei is 42 and previously oversaw research at what's now a competitor, OpenAI, working under its CEO, Sam Altman. He left along with six other employees, including his sister, Daniela, to start Anthropic in 2021. They say they wanted to take a different approach to developing safer artificial intelligence.
It is an experiment. I mean, nobody knows what the impact fully is going to be.
I think it is an experiment, and one way to think about Anthropic is that it's a little bit trying to put bumpers or guardrails on that experiment, right?
We do know that this is coming incredibly quickly, and I think the worst version of outcomes would be we knew there was going to be this incredible transformation, and people didn't have enough of an opportunity to adapt. And it's unusual for a technology company to talk so much about all of the things that could go wrong.
But it's so essential, because yes. If we don't, then you could end up in the world of like the cigarette companies or the opioid companies, where they knew there were dangers and they didn't talk about them and certainly did not prevent them.
Amodei does have plenty of critics in Silicon Valley who call him an AI alarmist.
Some people say about Anthropic that this is safety theater, that it's good branding, it's good for business. Why should people trust you?
So some of the things just can be verified now. They're not safety theater. They're actually things the model can do. For some of it, you know, it will depend on the future, and we're not always going to be right, but we're calling it as best we can.
That was Anthropic CEO Dario Amodei and his sister as well, speaking to Anderson Cooper and about what AI may, her name is Daniela Amodei, what we may be facing in the future. So we're sort of, we're being told that AI is the future, it's evolution, it's inevitable. They're investing hundreds of billions of dollars a year in it, growing the AI data centers, the infrastructure. And we discussed the data centers last week. And where is this going, and what does it mean if it succeeds, and what does it mean if it fails, right? Because they've not been comparing, calling this an AI bubble, right, in the markets, and comparing the potential failure of the bubble to what happened, in 2008 during the whole housing crisis, mortgage crisis, and then of course earlier than that, the .com bubble, right? And with they kind of look at the positive side, which is, oh, we ended up with this really great fiber optic infrastructure, which we didn't use right away, but then helped us later on. But is that the case with data centers, right? And the infrastructure they're building right now and diverting a lot of the economy towards. And a lot of the gains in stocks is due to AI, has been for the past year. But we have seen recently that Wall Street is sort of reacting not so positively recently. And also, of course, there was the raid on Elon Musk's offices in Paris, XAI. So the question is, with all of this, having to confront our own obsolescence, so there's no actual place mapped out for all of us in this new world that these billionaires are building, could that bring Americans together? Because, of course, the show is about that, like what will bring us together to stop authoritarianism, to take back our future, right? And so that's something that, as a Native woman and writer, I look at that a lot. You know, how do we take, I mean, from a Native perspective, of course, our lands are under occupation. Our right to basically define our future and our culture and hang on to things that matter to us, it was taken away. And it's something we fight for and try to map a path back to being our own people, again, our own peoplehood, again, our own languages, everything. And now we're seeing that companies with basically taking our collective human data and turning it into proprietary wealth for themselves, right? And it's a very small, group of people, just like you see with these data centers. It takes a lot of, craftspeople and engineers to build these data centers, like what they're building in Hillsboro, Oregon, But once they're up and running, they don't really need many people anymore, but they do need a lot of resources, you know, electricity and also water and things that taking it away from us and to a large extent driving up the cost of living for most people. We are in a consumeristic society. It's all built on capitalism. What happens when suddenly they don't have any customers anymore, right? That's the question. And so, anyway, we'll talk a little bit more about that. We've seen that, the billions that have been poured into AI, they call it capital expenditure or CapEx, it's been causing a bit of an issue with the markets. Amazon announced in its recent report that it will spend $200 billion on CapEx, capital expenditure, through 2026. This is an enormous increase. And of course, most of that is AI infrastructure, right? And the stock market did not respond positively to that. This Amazon stock saw a historic sell-off, dropping nearly 20% in 2 weeks. Basically, investors are very worried. They are worried that that Amazon is building a massive, expensive bridge to a future, a bridge to nowhere, basically, a bridge to a future that doesn't yet have customers, right? There's no obvious language that they're going to recoup that money, and it's actually not really a business model yet, right? So that's what happened. Amazon, of course, has its cloud division, and they need it to grow, basically, to get the $200 billion back, right? That's just for this year. They need the cloud division to grow 30% a year, right? So they're trying to be the digital landlord for every business in America, right? And basically, they're betting that by automating people's work and corporations, using automation and getting rid of staff, right, workers, that basically then your boss or you, if you're using it, will have no choice but to pay Amazon, kind of a form of rent. You know, they're going to be the landlord of the digital future space, and so they will pay that instead of paying salaries, right, to people. Why don't we play that clip about Amazon shares tanking?
Amazon shares plunged in after-hours trade Thursday, falling around 11%. The tumble came after it projected a surge of more than 50% in capital expenditures this year. The e-commerce giant plans to pump $200 billion into its AI efforts in 2026, joining other tech giants in a spending spree to build out artificial intelligence infrastructure. That has some investors worried about returns on the investment. Amazon Web Services' revenue grew to $35.6 billion in the December quarter. While that marked a rise of 24%, the pace of increase was slower than rivals like Google, and the figure was overshadowed by the company's capital spending surge. Speaking to analysts, Chief Executive Andy Jassy said it was easier for smaller competitors to post stellar growth rates. But the numbers will concern investors, with AWS accounting for over 60% of the firm's operating profits. The results are the latest sign that big tech will not be halting AI investments anytime soon. The top four so-called hyperscalers, Amazon, Microsoft, Google, and Meta, are expected to collectively spend more than $630 billion this year. One analyst told Reuters that, quote, "Amazon has to invest at these levels just to stay in the race." But this week's earnings suggest Wall Street has a message for tech titans. Keep spending if you like, but we want to see signs that returns are coming.
Yeah, so Amazon, they're going to spend $200 billion this year on capital expenditures for AI. Alphabet, it's Google, announced $175 billion to $185 billion. And Meta, it's Facebook, is $115 billion to $135 billion. Microsoft, $145 billion. So that's all total between $650 and $700 billion. That they're spending on building out AI infrastructure. And this is an increase of about, with all four of the major tech firms, about 67% from 2025 levels. And it does include AI chips as well, servers and data centers. So But yeah, this is expected to negatively impact the cash flow for these companies. And I can get more of the weeds on that, but definitely call in. Let me know what you think about this. Once again, the number here is 503-231-8187. And what do you think that we should do to prevent these billionaires from basically, in their pursuit of their own company growth and profits and self-aggrandizement, basically writing us out of the picture? What do you think should happen? And so that'd be my question. I know that there's some ways that I believe this is different than what would happen in 2008 with the mortgage crisis, is that they do have pretty deep pockets. I guess Ireland had something where if they set up shop there, they would have to leave all the money in Ireland. So they have billions of dollars in Ireland that they can tap into. Of course, Apple is not spending any money really on this. I guess they're waiting to see what happens. But yeah, that's kind of getting into the weeds of what we're talking about here today. But yeah, please let me know what you think. Basically, where do you think that this is going to go? The number is 503-231-8187. And do you think that facing this obsolescence will just unite Americans of all stripes and to basically confront and to begin to work together to build a better future? And so the thing is that, looking at what happens if it succeeds and versus what happens if it crashes, right? Scenario A, right? Let's say this all works out, right? AI infrastructure is built and it succeeds. They get all their money back. Everything works for the billionaires. Basically, we face a situation of projected joblessness, right? Project productivity without any jobs. and record profits for the 1%, but no paychecks for the 99%, right? And that doesn't really work in a capitalist system. If you don't have a job, you can't buy the product. And so it's, the snake eating its own tail situation. So, and then in scenario B, right, the crash, if the AI bubble bursts, right, the Magnificent Seven of tech stocks will lose 40% of their value, right? Most Americans are not invested in the stock market, but many have, their pension funds and 401ks in the stock market, they don't manage it themselves, but it's in there. And basically, so this is not just a Silicon Valley problem or a Wall Street problem, but it would affect most Americans. It'd be basically a depression coming out of the AI bubble. So once again, please do call in. What do you think should be done? 503-231-8187. And so I wanted to look at some of the things that governments are doing to confront this issue. And I think some of you may have heard earlier this month that the French government raided the offices of XAI in Paris. And for Elon Musk to come and testify, and he's been very kind of talking back, on his platform. Let's go ahead and play that. We have a caller. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, thank you. Yes, this is a huge subject, and in so many ways, environmentally with the data centers and, culture-wise, in terms of every isolation and team suicide, I mean, it's huge. But one thing I was going to say that's out there now is there I'm in Oregon, and we're doing a lot of work with blocking data centers. There's talk about wanting to get nuclear power back to find them. They do terrible damage to the environment, and there's a lot of ways to fight back. There's actually talk about getting a data center block at the federal level. So I guess I was calling in to say, please call your local legislators. They're putting in data centers all over the country. And so please call your legislators, local ones, to block this. and because it raises the power cost and it pollutes the water and takes the water, and it just doesn't really benefit anybody and very few jobs. So it's total lose situation for the citizens. And so again, it's also being talked about fighting it at the federal level also. So it's worth calling your federal legislators to block these data centers. And to also, there, I know in Oregon, there is the Power Act to hold at least the companies to make them pay for the power they use. And when they passed, they were just having the citizens pay for it. So there's movement happening in this area. And there are a lot of things to tap into to be active in the community, have your voice heard. There's also legislation right now in the federal level about the damage AI is doing to young people. So anyway, I just want to say, yes, there's things happening. So there's illegally, you know, on the legislative level. So use your voice. Call.
Yes, that's a great thing to point out here. Thank you. We had discussed last week about the different bills that are at the state legislature right now to be aware of and to maybe take action on. One is SB 1586. This is the Jobs Act, which would actually increase the urban growth boundary. It's supposed to be not for data centers, but it could, you know, the way it's written, it could be it could be circumvented and be used that way. So, and then HB 4084, this is the governor's bill, but it also may be supporting data center growth by expanding energy zones over 5 to 10 years and subsidies for data centers. And I think you can check the Tax Fairness Oregon site. They have more about it. And then HB 4046, which is a study on nuclear power in Oregon. And so it's seen as sort of a first step, sort of, I don't know, a volley to basically undermine Oregon state law against the building of nuclear power plants that was in 1980 or anyone. Yeah, so if you try to get around that and maybe exclude certain counties like Umatilla County or something. And so that's what's going on there. But yeah, those are, and then of course the Power Act is a positive thing that's come out of it, which is that HB, it already passed, but the basically, it will demand that that we not be held responsible to pay for data center load growth and stuff. So, and basically, making sure that large energy users are paying their fair share and stuff. So that's been a good thing. We have another caller, Jules.
Hello. I appreciate this topic. I think the y'all are getting into the weeds of proximate and the near-term things. I think there's a good zoom out that is now really important to do simultaneously, which is, in my opinion, a needs-based economy. You know what I mean? I'm sure, like, to Band-Aid and get maybe some good, some good blocks against this or that. I think if things are done for means of always profit, we will destroy the world. That's what I believe. I believe. And so I think it's okay to think in terms of now, especially a general strike for demands, you know, like, 80% of Democrats want ICE abolished. They don't want it. They don't want it, you know, three bullet points change on it. And I similarly think AI must be owned by the populace. And furthermore, you know, the medical industry needs to be not to make money. It needs to help to heal people. Housing needs to be to house people, not to use that asset to inflate. I think this is the way we have to keep this in mind now, because as you all know, everything is accelerating so fast, and there's a consolidation of power and money. And I think there could be tipping points where we know the last thing we have is general strike. So I know it sounds nebulous maybe, and it's not here yet. I think that's our last thing, because you can imagine a world where general strike doesn't even do anything, because it's possibly AI has even come in and rendered. I don't know if I sound dramatic, I'm sorry, but I this is the way I feel now. So I tell people to keep their ears open. Labor is talking about this. Some unions, Shama Sawant city councilwoman, ex-city councilwoman of Seattle, is talking about this. People are talking about it. So I'll let y'all go, but I appreciate the topic.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much, y'all. Yeah, those are really good things to point out. I'm going to briefly go over some of the other laws that are happening right now. And we're going to probably go through more of them later, but there's some other really good things. Of course, Oregon recently passed the disconnect bill, which would this is an interesting bill. Maybe we'll talk more in depth on it, we have another caller, Brad.
Yeah, hello. Hope everything's going well for you this morning. When it comes to AI, I have my own personal healthscape that when I anthropomorphize this technology, and it is in essence a herd of Tesla robots with T-shirts that are glowing the word Chernobyl on them, and I actually created a meme where it comes up to my door and it's knocking and it says feed me and my lights go out. You know, that's kind of the way I look at it. But another thing too is it's really fun asking things like Grok and OpenAI and Anthropic, asking them what are the potential threats that you have against me and what are the future threats that I have to worry about, and they have varying answers, which are, that's a fun thing to do. I do that occasionally. And the last thing is any technology, if you look at Microsoft Windows and all these technologies that they develop, there's always hackers that are trying to hack into it, and AI is susceptible to hallucinations. So I think if there is an empire and the Jedi are going to strike back, they're going to come up with some kind of, like, I don't know, digital LSD to give to the water to feed the robots. I don't know, that's all I got to say, I guess, but I have hope. So I hope everybody else does too, and have a nice day. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Okay, we have another call back. Just the disconnect bill, it's a disconnect state from federal tax code in part. So, but we'll talk more about. We have Tangent on the line.
Hey, Jackie, how are you?
Good morning. How are you? Good.
Great. I wanted to. My point is that now the machines, okay, were invented for us to tell them what to do, correct? And now the machines are telling us what to do. And I'll start with an example. We bought a new washer and dryer about 20 years ago, and always before you just turned on the washer or dryer and then it finished and that was it. But these new ones, they wanted to tell you every cycle they were on, a little beep beep here and a beep beep there, and also especially when they were done, and it would keep doing it like every 15 seconds, get me? Every 30 seconds, beep beep beep, beep beep beep. So now it was telling me, basically, in a way, to go get the laundry. Now AI is telling us, I need water, I need electricity. You hear me? The little machine to this huge machine saying, I want, I need. You have to give me, give me, give me. I think just do away with the whole thing. I guess some people have said it helps them do this, helps them do that. I think you're losing your abilities, your tools, whether in designing or what have you. I can't believe in art. People, even just the name of it is so retarded. Artificial, you can't do real intelligence. We can't have real intelligence. Okay, that's my...
Okay, thanks, Chan. That's very interesting. I think I'm going to just bring up one more hospital bill at the federal level, which is the Sanders bill, which is a federal robot tax, which has emerged in the Senate. And basically, it's a levy on companies with over 500 employees that reduce the human workforce by more than 10% in a year due to automation. And so that's an interesting idea, where basically this tax would then it would basically fund the government when the payroll tax base starts to disappear. Right. And so it basically would recruit a lot of Social Security, Medicare contributions that once came from human paychecks. So that's another very interesting thing as well. So, but let's go ahead and play the about the French raid on Elon Musk. XAI.
French prosecutors searched the offices of Elon Musk's social media platform X on Tuesday as part of a criminal investigation. Authorities are looking into alleged complicity in spreading child sexual abuse images, sexually explicit deepfakes, and Holocaust denial. Scripps News international correspondent Ross Cullen joins us now from Paris with more on this. And Ross, do we know what authorities were looking for in their raid and what they might have found?
Well, Holly, that raid taking place a little bit earlier on today here in the French capital. The French authorities looking into cybercrime assisted by the European Union's police agency, Europol. Now, it's all tied to an investigation that actually began in January last year over whether X's algorithm had been used to interfere in French politics. The investigation has since then been widened to look at X's artificial intelligence chatbot, Grok. We do know that the French prosecutors have announced that they have summoned Elon Musk here to Paris in April for a voluntary interview as part of this investigation, because there are also parts of the inquiry that are looking at allegations that there was the promotion of Holocaust denial content. Also, there were allegations related to data extraction and also complicity in the possession of child pornography. We know that in the past, X has characterized this specific French investigation as an attack on free speech. And we are waiting to hear, Holly, if Elon Musk will agree to coming here to Paris for that interview with Paris prosecutors.
Yeah, so that is Elon Musk his XAI being raided, and for really horrific reasons, and it's sort of shocking that here in the United States we're doing nothing about it, because of course they're citing algorithm abuse and extraction of data without consent, and that includes generating sexually explicit defects and misinformation, even about children. Right. This is really serious, and we're not doing anything about it here in the United States, but France is acting upon it, right? And I think you see the same thing with the Epstein files. Other countries are doing things, but we're not doing anything. And so, Musk has hit back, saying that, the French are acting illegally and stuff like that. And I think recently the Macron, he is leader of France. He also hit back saying that Elon Musk is just gets too much government funding, right? I think that Tesla and SpaceX have received at least $38 billion in government contracts, and so they really rely on federal funding to get by. This is not just capitalism. This is government money, our money, our tax dollars that are funding his dreams, right? Whether it's feeding wars with his children, his offspring, or what it's all coming from our tax dollars that makes his rather questionable business model actually work and make him the richest man in the world. So that's been going on there. What I see is that even though his businesses are, and all of these billionaires, their businesses are built in to a large part on our tax dollars, these companies, they show no loyalty to our democracy, right? Allegedly, capitalism and democracy are supposed to go hand in hand. That's what I've been hearing all my life, right? But it seems like right now it's decoupling, right? I think I said this before, it just seems like this form of capitalism without consumers, is actually going to proceed without the actual people it's supposed to liberate and serve. And that is just a crazy situation we are right now. And he is also, Musk and others are fighting the privacy regulations, regulations like what our Senator Ron Wyden has championed. And of course, France treating his innovation like it's a crime, they believe it is. Ron Wyden he recently gave a really blistering speech on data privacy. He's pushing the Privacy Act Modernization Privacy Act, the Privacy Modernization Act, and basically targeting both the government and private AI czars and how they handle our most sensitive information. So, so that's we become the data fuel that fuels their their work. I mean, I know that my writing's online, and you could probably ask an AI agent to basically write an article in my voice, right? That's the thing you could do because they've collected enough of that information. So, let's play the piece about ICE and weaponizing our data from Senator Wyden.
So I'm going to be watchdogging how ICE conducts domestic surveillance, and I can tell you right now, they are hoovering up personal data of Oregonians and Americans, and they basically use data brokers, a bunch of sleazy data brokers, and a top priority for me in this package that is being discussed in Washington, D.C., is to do everything we can to make a start at reining in these abuses of people's rights. And ICE's abuse of incredibly sensitive taxpayer data goes back to early 2005, when Elon Musk's Doge henchmen started spreading throughout the government. And we've been dealing with carefully screened data now for some time because we're making sure it is protected by ironclad law. And I want to make sure that people understand my position is anybody helping Trump, Stephen Miller, or Kristi Noem violate taxpayers' privacy rights ought to face prosecution. I think that privacy is an economic security, it's a family security, it's, by the way, a national security issue, and I'm treating it for that purpose, it being included in this package. The Fourth Amendment also is at risk. The way they take your personal information from these data brokers.
That was Senator Ron Wyden speaking earlier this month, and he and Rick Wien and Van Hollen, they all have a bill to protect Americans. This was actually earlier last year against Musk, Doge, and other unauthorized access. So this is the Privacy Act Modernization Act. Like, the act does appear twice in the same. And so it would basically empower Americans to see officials to misuse of their data and federal systems. And this is coming from their press release. And so it gives us the right to sue, right, the government, and also increases the penalties, raises civil and criminal penalties for violations of the privacy laws, and focuses on sensitive data to protect it. And including social security numbers, of course, Doge already got a hold of all of that stuff. I mean, it's pretty scary. And even as these different billionaires, they get these federal dollars, they get access to our data, being given these huge, they're just getting access to it. And it's pretty scary what they're going to do with it. And we have no recourse right now to do anything about it. And also they can, sue over medical records and financial data. And these things are always, you're constantly being leaked. And I think we've become sort of inured to it, these data leaks, but they are very serious. And in most other countries, they're doing a much better job of protecting their privacy rights of their citizens. This is, what we're going through here is pretty unusual. It's not normal, Anna. But I think we lose track of that because it all becomes so normalized in a way. And so, I know that there are about 37 U.S. states are responding to Grok, and it's creating CSAM, which are child sexual abuse materials for the Grok chatbot that that is part of X and Elon Musk's XAI. And so, this is, different states are basically, and two countries have actually blocked the app, and there are investigations also ongoing in the UK and the EU as a whole. So, but these are things that are very serious and really shocking. And yet, I guess with this administration, with Trump in our lives again and in our minds, it's so overwhelming how much is going on at once that it's hard to keep track of it all and to act upon it. But, so that's what's been going on. What do you think of Wyden's bill? Please do call in. The number here is 503-231-8187. And what do you think about our privacy and what that's being used to? Of course, all our information is being used by these data brokers and being sold without our permission, right? And also our information online and elsewhere is being, keep it hoovered up, basically, and being used to train these large language models that, basically power these AI systems, AI agents. You have Google, which, of course, has the most access to this sort of data because, of course, they are, they've been indexing websites for decades now, and they also have been, digitizing books with their Google Books. And so they have a very, other AI companies have to work on negotiating different rights with different places to get access to that data. I think Reddit just sold their, the conversations that are in there. But Google already has, it's their way ahead of the game that way. They have so much more data. And they also own YouTube. They basically are using that to train their AI models for, a realistic human sort of how our mouths move, how we talk. They're using, in addition to the what people are saying in those videos. So that's all happening, and we have no rights, no recourse about it and what they will do with it. And so, of course, as a caller earlier mentioned, and we had discussed last week, all of this is, of course, Amazon spending this $200 billion and the other $400 billion being spent per year, right, just for this year. Of course, our local communities here in Oregon are paying the price. As you know, Morrill County out in eastern Oregon has been dealing with issues with Amazon data centers, which use groundwater for cooling. And when that water evaporates, basically it leaves nitrates and they become highly concentrated. And this sort of toxic brine is then sprayed back onto farmland and seeps into the aquifer, and it poisons the wells of our of people living out there. And so, that's we have had a win here in Oregon, the Power Act, and basically it stops us from subsidizing the energy bills of these data centers, right? And that's all ongoing. So we're going to look at solutions, and we're going to look at universal basic income, and some laws that the European Union has, the EU AI Act as well. So we have a caller, Santiago. Sorry. Good morning.
Yeah, it's all good. Morning. I don't think it's necessarily. Like, I mean, at this point, AI is just like glorified spell check. I mean, a lot of these tech bros are trying to make it seem like it's the future. But essentially what they're doing is they're giving us a treat in lieu of not having any real power. You know, I was listening to the brother who called earlier. I think it was Jules or Joel, where he's talking about General Strike. Well, you know, the General Strike doesn't come out of nowhere, and it sounds kind of crazy to say based on like the timetable that we have, because we're not just dealing with like imminent social collapse of the government, but we're also essentially dealing with imminent like ecological collapse. But the thing is that we have to be trained out of this capitalist thinking. You know, the solutions that are being proposed to us in the United States are coming from people who fundamentally, they want to see change that doesn't cost anything, right? So the change, so I mean, all these things that they're suggesting, it's all the idea that like, you know, that somehow we're going to be able to keep capitalism intact while still giving, you know, they talk about like win-win, you know, that somehow these corporations and these tech bros think that they can science us out of problems that essentially humanity has scienced itself into via capitalism. But the thing is the general strike, the only successful general strikes that have come during the times where the people were essentially being led by anti-capitalist forces. Now, be that on some level, during World War One, World War Two era, we had labor unions and communist parties and socialist parties. These were essentially forces that allowed for the people to be educated in a direction that was directly antagonistic to the forces of the government that are inherently capitalist. It was essentially the threat of violence and immediate overthrow that allowed for the concessions of the New Deal to happen. Now, granted, the New Deal was inherently racist against black and brown folks, and it took a lot from us. But, if you're just looking for a basic, working example within the United States, that's one of them. And a lot of these Democrats especially lionize the idea that we can somehow peacefully and orderly, in a peaceful and orderly fashion, get things back to normal, but it's never been peaceful and orderly to take back power from these murderers and these rapists.
That's definitely showing, where they are. I agree. So, I'm going to get a little bit into the EU AI Act my question actually for you was, do you think that being faced with this, the lack of jobs and stuff, do you think that this could actually bring people together enough, all Americans, to actually do a general strike?
I think the impoverishment of the people will create the impetus for people to want to rise up. But the general strike will only come from people being educated into understanding that, essentially by preserving capitalism, because the general strike can happen under capitalism. Absolutely. It has and always, but the thing is, it's not going to stick if we think that simply getting concessions from the people, from the corporations and from these tech bros is going to be enough. And that's what the general strike is good, but without a guiding force behind it that is anti-capitalist, mm-hmm. anti-imperialist, anti-racist, it's not going to
billionaire
because anti-capitalism is inherently anti-billionaires, mm-hmm. because you can't. There's no ethical way to be a billionaire under capitalism.
AI Act. This is the world's first.
Use the example of the fry cook. If you're a line cook at Denny's, and you work $20 an hour for 10 hours in a day, but you have to put out 31 plates an hour at $10 at $10 a plate. By the end of your shift, you have made the establishment over $3,000, but they only pay you $200. The breakdown doesn't happen exactly across every industry, but that's exactly how capitalism works.
Thank you so much, Cynthia. Thank you. So the EU AI Act, this is, like I said, the world's first comprehensive AI law, and it actually classifies AI by risk, right? And it bans social scoring, and it limits how employers can use AI to monitor your emotions or productivity, right? And it's sort of based on a human-centric model, right? Unlike in the U.S., where, as Diego was detailing, we leave workers to fend for themselves, European countries are experimenting with universal basic income and these robot taxes, taxing the productivity of machines to fund the retraining of humans, and also to also fund other parts of the government as well. And once again, my question is generally, can actually confronting the situation unify Americans, whether, you're a computer programmer in Portland or a truck driver in Pendleton, the threat is is existential, basically. And so we're seeing a rare moment where both progressives and conservatives could be asking, right, who does this technology serve? You know, basically questioning the system, as Santiago was outlining. And if the middle class Americans, if the middle of America, you know, us consumers, right, are hollowed out, then, you know, what becomes of the social contract, right, that we've had? And so, this is sort of, even survival is at stake. So what do you think the U.S. should be doing to protect our future? Do you like the European Union AI Act? And what do you think about UBI, right? And so let's talk a bit about the universal basic income. I think a lot of us heard this discussed earlier. So let's go ahead and play that clip about UBI.
This morning, new insight into whether a universal basic income could one day be sustainable. It's from a study conducted by Sam Altman, the CEO of OpenAI, who has warned about major job losses across certain industries as artificial intelligence grows more powerful.
The speed of the change that may happen here is the part that I worry about the most.
Altman's study gave 1,000 low-income people $1,000 per month over a three-year period. It was free money, no strings attached. It's something former presidential candidate Andrew Yang supported during the 2020 campaign.
This would create millions of jobs, make our children and families stronger, and give all Americans a better chance to transition in the economy of the 21st century.
Altman's study found people mostly spent the extra money on basics, such as food, rent, and transportation. The largest increase in their spending was to help family and friends with their bills. Many people also put money in the bank. On average, with the extra money, they worked about 1 hour less per week. The research was conducted amid concerns that artificial intelligence will eventually make millions of jobs obsolete, leaving many people scrambling to find new ways to make a living.
With every great technological revolution in human history, although it has been true that the jobs change a lot, some jobs even go away. And I'm sure we'll see a lot of that here.
Critics dismiss the idea of a universal basic income as un-American, comparing it to socialism, saying it would lead to dependency and suffocate innovation in the economy. But tech industry titans, including Elon Musk, Twitter co-founder Jack Dorsey, and the so-called godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, support it.
So I'm very worried about AI taking over lots of mundane jobs. And that should be a good thing. It's going to lead to a big increase in productivity, which leads to a big increase in wealth. And if that wealth was equally distributed, that would be great.
The study also found with the extra $1,000 each month, people initially had less financial stress, but that stress eventually returned 2 or 3 years later.
Yeah, so the reporting got on a couple of years ago on a study that Sam Altman, you know, of OpenAI, paid for to see if universal basic income could actually be helpful. And of course, these tech billionaires are looking at it because they need us to stay alive as consumers, right? Basically, that's what they're looking at. This isn't stopping them from continuing to pursue what they're doing, which according to them is going to happen at a much more rapid rate of displacement of workers than in any other time in history. You know, we're not going to have the time to transition. And I know that some of the numbers they say, it is hard to tell whether what they're saying is just to talk to their funders, right? I know that, the Anthropic CEO, you know, is basically being accused of sort of, pushing the sort of alarmism and basically it kind of gets funders excited, right? So they want to get more money. And of course, he's been saying for a couple years now that in 6 months, AI is going to be able to do all of the software developer jobs, right? But that hasn't happened, right? They keep saying that's going to happen like right away. So, but I mean, even with that, I think that looking at UBI and basically it is a policy where cash is paid to everyone and with no strings attached, no testing or anything, and basically at a sufficiently high level to enable a life free from economic security. That's from Juliana Uhuru-Bidad-Vanier. She's a professor at Stanford. But this is not a new concept. I don't know if you know, but in 1797, Thomas Paine, right, proposed that a love fund would be granted to all citizens paid for by a tax on inherited land, right? He's looking at that inherited land and saying that should be taxed and that it should be given, redistributed to the people. And and Martin Luther King wrote in 1967 during the Civil Rights Movement that it would be a way, he wrote about UBI as a way to reverse entrenched inequality. He wrote, "The time has come for us to civilize ourselves by the total, direct, and immediate abolition of poverty by means of the guaranteed income." Right? And he was writing that in 1967. And so it is something that's been around within the United States for quite a while, right? And now with this, AI boom and further automation of, a lot of jobs, it is being revived again. And the question is, will this actually work? Will we be able to find a way to deal with all of this? And I don't know if universal basic income, where that is. I mean, we've been talking about that for a couple of presidential cycles, presidential elections now, at least three of them, I think. And the estimated benefit UBI of $10,000 annually, that's $10,000, would cost $3 trillion each year, which is equivalent to about 3/4 of the federal budget, right? And, of course, Musk has proposed a universal high income, not really basic income, and that's medical care, food, home, transport. And of course, he gets a lot of federal dollars for his work. So I guess he would know something about getting that money. The question is this, even if it was at $10,000 a year, would it be enough to counterbalance even a modest projection of 6 to 7% of the workplace being displaced? And so that's the question we have right now. And so, ironic, they're saying here that a lot of the professions that are at risk are, they've been saying that a lot of it is the, folks, white-collar jobs, entry-level white-collar jobs, jobs that college graduates would be doing, those are at risk, right? And it's hard to really get a good pinpoint on how much jobs have been lost because there's been a lot of back and forth whether the anecdotal news reports are actually accurate or not because they're saying that for some companies it's more cool to say that it's due to AI rather than other things like just natural contraction of the market and stuff. So it's really hard to know how much has actually happened. There's a lot of back and forth whether, I think there was a study done recently that found that software programmers who used Claude, this was in, I think, May 2025, the middle of 2025, version of Claude, basically whether they would actually, it would help them save time. And when they tested it, they found that it did not save time. The programmers who did not use Claude actually completed the task faster. And there are other issues with vibe coding, which is that it can really build a lot of error into the code, which will at some point accumulate to such an extent that human coders will have to go in like several years and just redo the whole thing, right? It's just not sustainable. And also a lot of the Moltbook, a lot of the coding that was done on that, it was easily became hacked and people's numbers and everything were stolen, and so it's quite it's not as stable as they're making it out to be. But that's sort of looking at that and whether it would actually work, right? And so that's kind of looking at. But yeah, I think we're almost out of time. But the question I guess I've been trying to pose all hour is, will facing this sort of job apocalypse brought on by the AI movement, if it actually succeeds, right? If it succeeds, that's a big F. Even faced with the prospect of that and the way in which our government is approaching it, will this be enough to unify Americans to actually, Republicans, red states, blue states, Democrats, progressives, unite all of us enough to actually do something about it, to really take control of our government and begin to make it work for us? Right, rather than for them, for the billionaires, and so that is really the question. And And so I hope it does. I mean, obviously, I hope that we have the ability to do a lot more. But of course, the other option, which we haven't discussed a lot today, is if they're you know, $600 billion and plus, that's just for 2026, so it's a much larger investment, capital expenditure on AI. If it does not pan out, what do we do when if it tanks the market, right? And there's already been issues with Trump's tariffs. We discussed this last week, causing a devaluation of the dollar and the decentering of the U.S. within the international economy. The EU has been EU states, countries have been saying, I think Zoom cannot operate in France and Germany now. I mean, we're being excluded, and so it's shrinking our economy. So, So this is all something we're trying to deal with, I think that I would definitely encourage you to follow Senator Wyden's privacy law, what's going on with that, and then also to follow the different bills they're going through to stop corporations from basic data protection, and then also our water and air as well. So thank you so much. This has been Jacqueline Keeler, and this has been another show of E Pluribus Unum. So thank you.
This is Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz, and this is KBOO Portland.
Tune in to KBOO on Saturday, February 21st at 4 p.m. for a special Black History Month roundtable discussion on The Motif, Reimagined.